Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm. We are back around this table. Welcome to the round table in Sports City. You got 60 minutes. I'm not going to get into that. I just took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive.
Like finding feathers on a house
cat. You take y'all somewhere else right now.
Looking for a needle in a haystack.
A nigga got zoned out with me, man.
Don't be scared.
Got zoned out.
She's left the center. Zoned out.
Real shit.
I hear the people talk.
I hear y'all.
Okay, Sean. Okay, the caller number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And thank you for everybody that's been checking us out, downloading the show, doing what they need to do to get their good old food for thought. Hopefully they are still doing these dishes and the numbers are still there. So thank you, Sports City, for dealing with us through these hard times in the kitchen. But we're going to make it happen. We're going to make it happen as best we possibly can. I do got my co-host and my big brother here in the building. Chandler, what's up? Welcome to the round table. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm pissed off at Blog Talk Radio. I know that. You know, you might want to tell the people at Blog Talk Radio, if they're going to send reminders out about shows, how about they send a reminder out before the show has aired? I'm just saying. It's a reminder. It's not a, oh, by the way, you missed the show.
Hey, I don't know. I don't know. That's the technicalities or to the powers that be, to the people upstairs in Blog Talk. But, I mean, as long as we're here to give these people the good old food for thought, I'm trying, man. I'm trying to pull things from every angle. Hopefully we can do our best. Hopefully they can get in and do some live participation with us. We've been dealing with everything that Blog Talk is throwing at it. Yeah, that's right. I'm talking to y'all. I'm talking. We here on y'all network doing work, but y'all have been slipping a couple of times, you know, throughout the years. But hey. Let's not even throw punches. Let's do what we need to do. Get these dishes out now. I don't know which way to go. Do you want to go basketball or football? Now, interesting enough, I know the basketball dish that I brought to the kitchen will definitely get you hyped up, and you're already there. So I think I could actually let this sit on the back burner. But we can dive into a little football right now. This is just to set it off, to leave that entree, if you will, back there for you, because I know you can't wait. Or you already know where I'm going to go. But we'll see. Okay, so first and foremost, I want to talk about, I'll get into the hors d'oeuvre of the situation now. I want to talk about the wide receiver dilemma that the Panthers have at this moment. Now,
we are not starting there. You know where we need to start, Ty.
Okay, so you start us up. You start us up because I had a couple of names in the wide receiver carousel that actually drew some interest toward the Panthers, but I guess you don't want to discuss that. I'll wait till some more people show up. But what topic would you like to go to first?
First off, no one cares about the Panthers. We need to talk about Robert Griffin and the Washington and the Washington Redskins. You know this. Did you see the game last night? Did you see the game?
Yes, I saw the game. Of course I've seen the game. You know I try my best not to talk about them, but I have to talk about this game. Okay, so give us your thoughts or analysis on what you seen last night in that game.
What I see is a coach trying to get a player killed. See, we had this discussion, was it Sunday? Monday?
This week. We had the discussion this week.
And I said to you, Robert Griffin will never be successful with Jay Gruden as his coach. You said to me, oh, you can't put it all on the coach. How you feel about that now, Ty? How you feel about it now? How would that
one, I was the wait, but I was the one that said he wasn't the best in the league. I was the one literally barking like crazy that he shouldn't put himself in that conversation. And obviously, I agree with you with the situation with what problems they're having up front and what they're having him do. It just doesn't pan out to help him favorably. But your thoughts on the situation around Gruden and RG3 at this point in time?
Jay Gruden should be fired right now. And here's what's pissing me off. You got all these people. Somehow it's Robert Griffin's fault that his offensive line is a bunch of clowns. Anybody who watched that game, try to, and I've heard it all day long, oh, well, he should have made a play. Most quarterbacks get 3 seconds on average, right? About 3 seconds, 1, 2, 3, and you got to get rid of the ball. He had maybe a second and a half. He had maybe a second and a half, Ty. How in the hell are you supposed to make a play when on your second step on a 3-step drop, you're getting hit? Did anybody watch this game that actually doesn't have an agenda against Robert Griffin? And for Gruden, go ahead.
I mean, no. I mean, I don't have an agenda against him. I actually loved every last bit of what was happening. So I don't know if it's fair to ask me this question or breakdown, but it's fine. I could answer, but please proceed.
I understand you're rooting for the Lions, but if you take your Lions bias out of it, there's no way you can tell me that anything that happened last night was his fault. Just, oh, he got injured. It was his fault. He should have made a play. He never had time to make a play, Ty. He never had time to scan the field. He didn't have time to go to his hot read. And then Jay Gruden, well, I had to put him back out there. The man was getting beat up from the first snap. Why would you send him back out there in the second quarter? Your first team offensive line gave up 3 sacks, 6 hits. First team offensive line. The Lions didn't even play in Ndamukong Suh, Ty.
Ndamukong Suh's not there anymore.
Well,
I'm joking.
Imagine if Suh was still there. It would have been like 17 sacks.
Right.
The bias against this kid is mind-boggling. And the fact that Jay Gruden keeps getting a pass because his last name is Gruden is sickening to me. The reason Robert Griffin will not be successful in Washington, D.C. has far less to do with his talent and much more to do with the fact that this coach is doing everything he can to sabotage this kid.
Now let me look at it like this so I can get this thing started. What are they supposed to do? Well, let me say it like this. What do you think Gruden wants to see? Because to be honest, Kirk Cousins didn't look too great. Colt McCoy didn't look great either. I mean, what are they to do at their quarterback position? I mean, even if they are to get RG3 out of there and he doesn't look like the comfortable quarterback under center, I mean, their next two options aren't the best of quarterbacks for that system.
They're not, and that's the problem. Jay Gruden is trying to fit square pegs. Jay Gruden refuses to acknowledge the fact that his system doesn't fit the talent on his team. Oh, and here's a thought. Since you're such a great offensive mind, how about you actually sign some offensive linemen who can block, who can pass protect? The hell with running the ball. Let me just see them pass protect. I don't want to hear what Trent Williams was in the game. There were still 5 offensive linemen out there. Ty, I could have gotten through that offensive line last night. I could have gotten through that. So I don't want to hear from Jay Gruden about – I don't want to – listen, Jay Gruden should be fired. You have 3 capable quarterbacks. Now, I'm not a Cousins guy. You know that. But I think Kirk Cousins is a serviceable quarterback who could probably start for some teams in this league. I think Colt McCoy, in the right situation, could start for teams in this league. I know Robert Griffin can ball. We watched him do it. Yet all 3 of those quarterbacks look like trash under John Gruden, Jay Gruden. So how is it RG3's fault when all 3 quarterbacks look terrible under the same coach?
This is the one thing that I mean, And I don't even want to say into defense for the Redskins, because to be honest, I wanted to see that pressure be brought in. And that is my question mark toward the Detroit Lions defensive front, is how they managed to still create pressure without Sue and Fairley. Because last year, a lot of that havoc was being wrecked by Fairley and Sue in the middle of that line up until week 9. And, you know, Fairley's knee got injured, and that front line had to basically depend on Sue to create that pressure. And they're still being able to, you know, get pressure up the middle and get to the quarterback. So, I mean, you know, granted, Ziggy was getting back there, and it was a crucial hit that DeAndre got on him, too. I mean, if you didn't see that hit that DeAndre put on him. And that's the one thing, this is the one thing I'm giving the Redskins is, you're starting to see more blitzes now. And I don't know if that front line is accustomed to picking these guys up on the select gaps as they're coming through to try and get to the quarterback, but those are the opportunities that they had to get to RG3. And the best thing about Detroit's defense was to get to an elusive quarterback that has speed before he could get started to get confidence to move the chains with his legs. And that was something that they had to do early to slow up RG3. But I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, right now this is week 2 in the preseason. I don't know how strong or you know, significantly better they get in the next 2 weeks before they actually start the regular season.
Ty, you have a mobile quarterback. Play action pass. Roll the pocket. These are simple things you can do. Rex Ryan was able to do those type of plays with Geno Smith, but Jay Gruden refuses to do it with RG3. By the way, on that DeAndre Levy hit, everybody screaming, make a play. He saw Levy coming. He stood there and took the hit, Ty, and completed the pass. So I don't want to hear about, well, he saw him coming. And sometimes as a quarterback, you got to stand there, know you're going to get hit, and make the pass anyway. We watched him do that last night on that play. And he got leveled by Levy.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
He got lit up. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yet, all I hear today is criticism of Robert Griffin. What the hell exactly did he do wrong last night? I need to know.
I think a lot of people are picking on him because he got injured, but injuries happen. And I don't find that a fair assessment for people to, you know, say, oh, he's injury prone, so on and so forth. This, you know, you can never predict on what's going to happen in the midst of a game, let alone, just like you're saying, their protection wasn't there for him to at least, you know, avoid some of these situations. And him running out of situations, the fumble that he was, you know, letting go back there, I mean, he was getting tackled by multiple people at the given time. Usually when you see sacks, I mean, granted, you'll see group game tackles and game sacks in the back, you know, in the offensive backfield, but it was happening a bundle of times. I mean, RG3 was seeing at least 2 to 3 people back there. I don't know if he upset the front line or if this front line is really that questionable. I'm being nice by saying questionable because I loved it. At least from quarter 1 to quarter 2, I was happy. You know, after the outcome of the 3rd or 4th quarter, you know, kind of fell through with the quarterback they still have behind center. But from what they did with the first team, I really wonder if this is how they're going to present themselves in the regular season, and they're not being able to block anybody. Now, mind you, you already got a receiver that has talked a whole bunch of junk at DeSean Jackson. He's out. Garcon lipping off at the mouth at J.J. Watt. I think a lot of people are going to put their ears back and try to come after this Redskins team. So they're going to have their hands filled with RG3 making a statement saying he's one of these, you know, the best quarterback in the league. DeSean, Pierre Garcon, I mean, like I said, their hands are full at this point.
Oh, and by the way, that's not what he said, even though I know that's what's been put out there. His exact statement was he believes he has the ability to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. That was his exact statement. He didn't say I'm the best. He said he has the ability to be the best, and he does. So once again, you got, I don't know what the media's problem is with Robert Griffin. Maybe it's because he's an intelligent young black man who is not getting arrested, not beating up his girlfriend or wife, not doing drugs, that he's respectful, that he carries himself properly. Maybe they're mad because he got endorsements that, you know, would normally go to white quarterbacks. I don't know what the problem is. I really don't know. I know that from the day this young man stepped in the league, there has been a media agenda to disparage and character assassinate this young man. everything he says is dissected and basically misconstrued and misquoted and definitely quoted out of context. And
okay,
go ahead.
No. I think we have Nacho here, but go ahead. No, I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish up, and then I'll get him in here.
It bothers me, man, because anybody, if you're paying attention, tell me what Robert Griffin has ever truly done wrong in the NFL. Tell me what he's done wrong.
I think and I don't even want to call it wrong because he's more or less a young quarterback trying to, you know, go through his mistakes or stuff that, you know, we find questionable by him getting through a full 4-year run of college and then coming to the pros. But I think the one thing that, you know, he had to learn from was, you know, getting down before some of these guys come to hit him. You know, the slide situation. If he didn't slide it, I mean, his knee wouldn't have got injured in that situation up against the Ravens, if I'm not mistaken, where he got injured. And, you know, a lot of that stuff started to spiral downhill, you know, toward the remainder of it, you know, where we're at right now in this portion of his career. That's the only thing I could think of.
All right.
Okay, we do have Nacho in the building. Nacho, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
Hey, what's going on? Can you guys hear me?
No,
yeah, you're good.
Can't hear you.
I'm making sure I got a new headset, so I'm just making sure I'm working it out, all the kinks on it and right. Just wanted to make sure. But jumping right into it, I totally have to agree with Chandler. I don't know what he's done wrong as it pertains to Robert Griffin III. And everything you need to, want to, or have to know about Robert Griffin III and the Washington Redskins is this. When they drafted him, not more than two rounds later, they drafted another quarterback. That's all you have to know about Robert Griffin III. You pick a quarterback at number two, and then you take a quarterback a couple rounds later. If that's not disrespect, if that's not, I don't want this kid here, we're just doing it because the media and everyone says we have to take him at number two, so we will. But that's not who we want. What we really want is Kirk Cousins, and we're going to take him. That's what that tells me if I'm looking at that from the outside. It doesn't show me any kind of loyalty or any kind of backing from the Redskins to Robert Griffin III from the jump, from the beginning, from the very start of it. I just don't know. I can't recall. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can't recall a team in the top three picking a quarterback and then in round three picking another one. I don't know if it's been done before. And not only did they pick another quarterback, but they picked one who had a high grade draft status, who was falling in the draft, who was supposedly supposed to be a steal to some people if he would have got picked up by almost anyone else who needed a quarterback. But I just don't understand that whole concept, and that's what really irks me about the whole situation. We could talk about the fact that they don't put enough talent around him offensive line-wise. We could talk about the fact that Jay Gruden doesn't know how to call plays for him or is deliberately calling the wrong things, calling plays where he knows he'll be in trouble. And instead of putting him in positions where he'll succeed, and then if something does incidentally happen, hopefully he can escape. He's just putting him in any situation and thinking he can escape from it. So I just don't understand that either. So from all of that, it seems to me, and it's crazy to say this, but from day, well, technically now that the draft's, you know, 3 days, from day two of the draft, they haven't had Roberts back, and I feel that's how it's been since the beginning.
Okay, now, before I get away from it, one, I don't even know if they're comfortable with Kirk Cousins, just to clear the air on that one, Nacho. So I know they selected both of them in the same draft. Cousins has not looked impressive in the past two seasons, nor in this preseason right now. So I feel like all three of them could be questionable at this point in time. But right now with him, with a concussion and a stinger, they're going to have to get one of these guys ready before they can actually just say, you know, RG3, we can put you back out there. But the one thing that I, you know, that bothers me, and I give, you know, a coach like Harbaugh credit. You work with what works best for the quarterback, and if the defense can't stop it, we're going to keep doing what we need to do. It doesn't have to be the same play, but we can run that same style until you guys stop it, and we go to something else that you guys can't stop. You guys are prepared for it. Now, this is what I looked at with, like, Harbaugh dealing with, you know, Kaepernick, and that stuff was actually successful, getting Kaepernick to, you know, two different NFC championships, helping, you know, the 49ers get to, you know, three NFC championships, one with Alex Smith, but he fell short up against the Giants, and, you know, Kaepernick get to a Super Bowl, they fell short. But having a young quarterback, like, try to learn the intricacies of, you know, some of these exotic defensive packages and what they're going to throw at these guys, especially being an elusive quarterback. You had a situation where RG3 came in here in his rookie season, and they were running that read option offense to a T. People couldn't stop the Redskins. The Redskins had the best running attack in football at that given time, let alone they had Pierre Garçon just added to the chemistry of this offense. And now all of a sudden, you remove that from this quarterback that's working well for a quarterback that got to a postseason with the Washington Redskins, and this doesn't even look like a team that could get to the postseason on no accord, not defensively, not offensively, not in front of the offensive line, defensive line. I mean, all phases of the game, the Redskins got a lot of work to do, especially in a division where they're going to be highly seen. They're going to be on every noticeable nationally televised camera because they got teams like the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Eagles that they got to go up against at least six times. And they look like they're going to get punished throughout the season. Now, I strongly question 8-8. I think they might be an under 500 team. I truly do.
You might be right, Ty. And just to clear it up, I don't think that they want Kirk Cousins now over him. What I'm saying is from the very beginning, it felt to me like the Redskins have never fully backed Robert Griffin III. Whether whoever the head coach was, whoever the front office was, it just felt like from the beginning, there was no back behind RG. There was no one behind him. He was kind of out by himself. You know, and the fans are pretty much the only ones who had his back. And now they're just, you know, I don't know what their problem is now. Maybe it's like Chandler said, the media and everything they do to make everything his fault all the time, no matter what it is. That may sway the fans. But like I said, I don't think that they want to take Cousins now over Robert Griffin III. I'm just saying that particular time, that draft, that speaks volumes to me when you take another quarterback like that, who some majority of draft analysts or whatever you draft scouts had Kirk Cousins as a year one starter. You know, whether or not he would have been great or whatever, had he fallen into the right system or the right coach. But you just don't do that to the number two pick and you automatically put him in quote unquote, what could be a competition. That just me doesn't show your back. And that's all I'm trying to say by that. I don't think they want Cousins over Griffin now though. That, you know, that's,
Now, ever. I don't care when they want to pick it. He has not shown progress yet. Yet, not at all. And whoever was the analyst, whoever is the analyst that think that he should be a starting quarterback or running a show in the NFL, whoever they like, put him on their team and let him run the show. I don't think it will look good. Cousins is a turnover waiting to happen. He has no confidence in that market.
I'm not talking about right now. I wasn't talking about right now.
I said ever. I'm saying ever.
Hindsight 2020 to say it now, that yeah, now obviously in the draft you were going to put him over him when you look at it now. But back then, you didn't know what either one of them was going to put on the field when it came to the NFL. That's what I'm trying to get at. You had a clean slate with both of these quarterbacks, and you're supposed to back Robert Griffin III. I don't care what happens after that. You're just supposed to back him. The fact that they drafted another quarterback and the fact that he could have started on another team, that automatically says you don't back the guy you just drafted to me. Maybe I'm wrong,
okay.
And I'm outlandish. That's what I mean.
Well, Nacho, I'm going to tell you this. In his first season, he got to the postseason. They took the whole system away from him, and a coach that backed him in Shanahan. Even though him and Shanahan had their spats, him and Shanahan worked. That offense ran the ball well, and they got their passes off. They removed that to bring a coach that's going to have a rift with him. That didn't work. I don't understand how this team was a playoff team 2 years before this year right here. And now all of a sudden they look like they weren't even a shell of what they looked like 2 seasons ago. Nothing like that.
There's a couple of things. There's a couple of things. And you guys know I'm a card-carrying conspiracy theorist. Okay? You know that. And Ty, you know my living situation now, so I don't care who likes what I'm about to say. Robert Griffin should have been the first pick in the draft. There was no way in the hell the city of Indianapolis was going to have a dark-skinned black quarterback as their quarterback. So he went number two to Washington, D.C. We all know the population, majority Redskins fans. In that stadium, that's one of the few stadiums that when they pan through the crowd, you see a lot of black faces.
Yes, you do.
See a lot of them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they drafted the black quarterback. Then they drafted the white quarterback. Then the black quarterback, dark skin, took the league by storm. Robert Griffin was poised to become the face of the NFL. I believe the NFL didn't want that. They don't want a dark skin quarterback as the face of their league. They don't. So what did they do? They made sure that, you know, and along with the fact that the Redskins were about to be involved in all the litigation about the name, their trademark name. So now, imagine, if you will, the Redskins are one of the top teams in the league. You got everybody and their mother calling them racist, and they got a dark-skinned guy as the face of the league. NFL wasn't about to have that. So Shanahan got let go. You bring in Jay Gruden, who's going to destroy this kid's future. You start promoting Russell Wilson. Seahawks come up. Now, RG3's a bum. Russell Wilson can be the face of the league because he's light enough to appeal to everybody. This is what I believe. I'm always going to believe it. Because you can't explain to me how you take a kid, he takes your franchise, which hasn't been in the playoffs in forever, to the playoffs, running a system that everyone swore wouldn't work in the NFL, and then you decide, as the owner of that franchise, we need to go into a different direction. Those things don't add up. They don't add up. They do not add up. They do not add up.
Now, do you think it was more of a Snyder move, or do you think this was general management?
I think this came down from the league. I think the other owners got Dan Snyder in the room and said, look, this is what's getting ready to happen. You need to get on board.
Okay. Hey. Now, is there anything else that you'd like to say behind RG3 before we get away from it?
About RG3, know that what Chandler just said, though, real quick, Green Bay Packers don't have an owner, so keep us out of that conspiracy theory. But everything else you said, it sounds pretty much spot on.
Okay, now in light of that game, I mean, Chandler, from what you've seen, is there anything else that you'd like to speak on in the Redskins and Lions preseason game?
If the Lions defense plays like that this season, you better win the division. That's all I'm gonna say.
I mean,
you got Nacho around here, so I don't want people catching feelings. I didn't persuade that by any means. Okay, because he gets mad. Hold on. He gets mad if I say Mayweather at all. So
okay.
don't.
Let me ask him a question. Nacho, taking the fan bias out of it, right? The way that Detroit front line played against Washington, right? If they play like that every game, as just a football fan, if they don't win the division, wouldn't you look at them and be like, really? You couldn't win the division with that defense?
Yes and no, really. But then you'd have to second guess because Aaron Rodgers is in that division. Well, other than that, yeah, if they play like that against Washington for 16 weeks, damn right they should win the division.
See, I told you, Jalen, hey, you got to watch what you say around the kid. He don't, You don't deal too well with that stuff, and I didn't do it. Okay, so I'm gonna just say this. You know, since don't nobody want to talk about them, and I try my best not to talk about my team, but I have to. I am really, and it's early. It's early. I'm impressed with Stafford right now, and I'm one of his worst critics, especially outside of this kitchen. Last year, I told myself I would grow up and give him a chance, and he did work, and he got us to a playoff, you know, so on and so forth. But I'm impressed with how he's dealing with pressure. He's doing it again without Calvin on the field. The first two games now that he's without Calvin, he's getting his high completion rate up, so that's good, because you know there's always going to be that question mark around if Stafford could really do this consistently. I want to see him do this through the portion of the season. I'm happy as of now, and everybody has a lot of interesting things to say about him, because this is the make-or-break. A lot of people are saying that this is the make-or-break season around Stafford. I'm actually happy with what he's doing at the quarterback position. And there's a struggle or a fight, if you will, at the running back position that a lot of me and the people that, you know, are fans of the Lions, I don't know if people are watching them close, but there's a running back named Zach Zenner fighting for a position behind Abdullah and George Bell. And this guy is running the ball significantly, and he has good hands out of the backfield too. So they really are saying George Wynn is out of there. I was fighting for George Wynn because George Wynn did a lot of work last season, preseason and in the regular season also. And now that his snaps were limited because of Reggie Bush and George Bell, now it's his opportunity to do so. And now you got a youngster that just comes to the team and might force him out of the picture again. So that's another interesting thing that I got from the game. But I was definitely pleased with what Detroit's defense was able to do. And this is without Haloti Ngata, without him being healthy. Once Nada's in the way, and if they can continue to create pressure like that, I just want to see how it pans out. I'm going to be calm. I'm not going to say too much about this. I'm going to move forward. Okay. The other game in the evening was the Buffalo Bills going up against the Cleveland Browns. And a very low-scoring game, 11-10, if I'm not mistaken, how the score went down. And, you know, not too many impressive things that happened. Also, can't forget that LeSean McCoy is out as well. But you had a couple of glimpses from E.J. Manuel as well. I seen one play where he actually stood in there and took a wallop and still made the throw in the outside flat. I want to see how you guys feel about it. One thing that I took from Cleveland side of the ball, even while they had Manziel in there for the second half, and I may be jumping the gun, and it could be a situation where he's still, you know, caught in his way or style of football, but I don't think he's comfortable being in the pocket. Johnny Manziel is not comfortable being in the pocket. Even though he's elusive, he makes a lot of stuff happen on the go. He made one throw where he had to stay in the pocket and make the throw because the you know, basically breaking down on the outside or the perimeter where he couldn't escape, and they had that rush coming up the middle. He made a throw in the pocket, you know, trying to throw the ball downfield. He could not get that ball downfield. So, you know, there are some questions, or if they're regretting letting go of a guy like Hoyer, or if they're really ready to proceed with McCown, and I'm not comfortable with McCown at the quarterback position either, but I want to see how you guys feel about that game last night with the Bills up against the Browns last night. Nacho, I'll start with you first.
Sorry about that. I had it muted. The game itself, like you said, low scoring, wasn't really much to see. You know, either team just doing the things they can. I didn't see much from either offense, obviously, and we can see in that score, 11-10. But the one thing I took away from it was, like you said, and you hit it right on the head, and it was the one glaring thing that I wanted to see was Johnny Money and how he did. And that's what I noticed as well. He doesn't seem right. He doesn't want to do that. And I don't know if they're trying to force feed it, like you said, shove it down his throat, or I don't understand if he's, you know, willing to learn and he's just, you know, when it's game time, he just can't turn it off, and that's not who he is. Sometimes that I believe that's what some players are. They are who they are, and they can, you know, change it in practice or try to grow on some certain things. But sometimes who they are is who they are, and they can't change it. And in live, in game situations, they go back and revert to who they are no matter what happens during practice for six full days if you wanted to, six two-a-days before the game, and the game hits, they're still going to do what they do. And that, I feel, is Johnny Manziel. And to me, he can be effective if like you said, not comparing the players or making them one and the same. But like you said with Robert Griffin, he is a player that can move with the ball, and he can be effective while moving with the ball. So move the pocket with him, do things for him to make him feel more comfortable and make him, you know, the better quarterback, the best quarterback he can be for your team to put W's on the board. Now, you brought up a good point. This front office and this coaching staff may be more comfortable with Josh McCown. I am certainly not. I definitely would like for them to find a way to make Johnny Manziel their quarterback and find a way to work the offense around him and make it work to put points on the board and to get some wins here. So this is definitely something when it comes to Johnny Manziel. I feel like he's just going to be the player who he is, and there's no amount of practice. And there's no amount of trying to change it as much as he wants to. He is who he is. And I don't think the Browns or himself should fault him for who he is, because he's a pretty dang good football player if you can treat him right, or if you could put him in the right system and make it work. So I think they can start winning some games, and I think that offense can be good if they do it. But like you stated, who knows if they're even behind him at all? Who knows if that's who they even want. So if that's who they want, then they should start acting like it and putting them in some positions to win.
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on the game last night? One of the teams that you have to be worried about at least two of the games throughout the season, and also a team that we've been talking about in depth, I think, for the past two or three seasons, being the Cleveland Browns and what their quarterback dilemma is at this point in time.
Well, I'll talk about the Bills before I get the ridiculous statements you made. I like what I saw from Tyrod Taylor. As I said to you, whenever it was, I said it to you, Matt Castle's a bum. The fact that he is in an actual quarterback competition with Tyrod Taylor tells you all you know about Matt Castle. And Tyrod Taylor should be starting quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. Period. End of story. If Matt Castle can't beat out Tyrod Taylor by the second week of preseason, he does not deserve to be a starting quarterback. Because Tyrod Taylor is raw. Very raw. As evidenced by the sack he took in the red zone. And Matt Castle still hasn't won the job. Matt Castle's a bum. Now, let's get to the statements you just made. So how long have you been watching and playing football?
Say it again.
How long have you been watching and playing football?
Over two decades.
Okay. You've seen guys come out of spread offenses before, right?
Right.
How many of them look comfortable under center? How many of them look comfortable being pocket passers when they first get into the league? How many?
None of them.
So, you almost made me choke because you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm choking here. So then why would you say, oh, he doesn't look comfortable? Of course he doesn't look comfortable in the pocket. He's never played
Chandler,
out of the pocket.
There was one play he couldn't even make the throw downfield. I could care less if you feel that's a ridiculous statement. If you watched the game and seen that pass, you would feel differently about that pass or with the statement that I made.
I watched the game. I have NFL Network on both of my phones. I watched the game.
Okay, so do you remember the pass that I'm talking about in the fourth quarter where they try to do the two-minute drill?
I do. Yes, I do. And, of course, I don't expect him to look comfortable in those situations yet. I really don't. Last season was a joke, okay? This season...
Okay, so by me making this statement, making this quote-unquote ridiculous, they went with the guy that... Okay, fair enough. Hoyer looked good with this offense. Hoyer didn't look that questionable making those passes downfield.
Ty, of course he doesn't look comfortable yet. He's still learning how to play quarterback. He's still learning how to play quarterback. Period.
Okay.
He's never
we'll
played.
See.
He's never. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
No. I said we'll see. No, I wasn't trying to speak. I said we'll see. You continue.
He's still learning how to play quarterback, which means that something as simple as that play requires thought from him. He has to, what am I doing? Athletes don't do well when they have to think about what they have to do. He's a guy who's never been asked to play out of the pocket. He's a guy they said, Johnny, take the ball and do you. He's never been asked to read coverages. He's never been asked to go through his progressions. They said, Johnny, make it happen. So he's always just relied on himself. Now he has to rely on his blocking, read his keys, watch his receivers, and do all of the things a real quarterback would do. It's his second season. Of course he's not going to look comfortable. Of course he's not. Of course he's not.
I really find it hard for him to get his feet underneath him, at least in this season, and then we'll see how it pans out next season. And plus, he's going to be behind McCown. And if McCown, and I don't think he will, but if McCown is successful, he will still be behind McCown until McCown clocks out.
Yes.
Like
he should be. He's not ready yet, Ty. He's not ready, along with the fact that his coach doesn't want him. Let's keep in mind that he's in the same situation in many ways that RG3 is. Mike Pettine never wanted Johnny Manziel.
Okay, you so know, what's the difference between him and EJ Manuel?
EJ Manuel has just fallen down on it. Has just fallen off. I don't know what the hell's going on with EJ Manuel. Maybe he's lost confidence. I don't know, but EJ Manuel has regressed so much from his first season. It's not funny. And anybody who watched EJ his first season, you look at him now, it's not even the same guy. It's not even the same player. So I don't know what's going on with EJ. Maybe he thought he had it on lock and he didn't have to study his playbook. He thought he had it made, or I'm the starting quarterback in the NFL team, which we know can happen. EJ Manuel has basically thrown his career in the toilet.
But he looked all right last night. He looked all right last night. He didn't do too bad.
Against third and fourth stringers.
Man, that was going to be a third and fourth. Wait. What's the difference between Johnny Football and EJ? That's what it's asking. They both were going to get third and fourth stringers. They both were in that final quarter.
Yes, but EJ played a full season as a starting quarterback, Ty. Johnny Manziel hasn't. This is his third year, Ty, not his second. EJ doesn't have the excuse of, I'm still learning. There are certain things EJ Manuel is supposed to be able to do at this point that he can't do, that he did in his first season. So I don't want to hear you can't do it in your third season. That's the difference. EJ Manuel did things in his first season that he should still be doing now. He has regressed. He's now suddenly looking like he's a first-year quarterback, which says to me that you haven't been practicing your craft. Johnny Manziel's in his second year. EJ Manuel's in his third. How in the hell does EJ Manuel look just as bad as Johnny Manziel?
I don't think he looked bad last night. Like I said, EJ actually threw a touchdown pass as well. We do have a caller queue. I'm going to get him in here. Calling out of Georgia, we have Nas in the building. Nas, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm well. What's going on, y'all?
Not too much, man. So your thoughts are on you coming to the kitchen, throwing things around the roundtable, especially with the discussion we have going on with the quarterback situation in the game last night?
I got a few disagreements on this one, man. EJ is just not that good. He never has been. I was surprised he got drafted in the first round. I don't think work ethic is in question here. EJ's always been a hard worker. I think he's a great interviewer. He has that demeanor. Like, my friend interviewed him at the ACC championship game one year. He brought the tape back and I watched it. He's really good at saying integrity and character. And, you know, he holds himself up straight and he looks you in the eye, shakes your hand, all that. All the stuff old school people really, really like. So I feel like he just did a really good job in the interview room. His measurables look good. But if you remember, in college, he wasn't ever accurate. And in Buffalo last year, they had complaints from teammates about him throwing them into danger. Like, if you can't play because you're throwing people into danger, that's a huge problem. And I don't think that's the thing of reading the defense just in total. He's just never been a good quarterback. He got drafted way too high, and now they're kind of seeing that he's just really limited. I don't think you can build EJ into being like some kind of superstar. And as far as Manziel, like, well, I agree with y'all on Manziel. He's had all the same problems every quarterback who kind of went through the ranks. Running spread stuff and option stuff and things like that. He's got to learn, you know, the new NFL game, and he's got to learn to read defenses and play from the pocket. And, you know, it's gonna be some, you know, some bumps in the road there. Do I think he'll ever be really, really good? No, because I mean, how do you change your game that much at this level, especially with his size? I just don't really see it happening. Can he be good for a, you know, small game sample? Okay, but. Is he a franchise guy? No, I think Cleveland should draft a quarterback next year.
Really? So you think Manziel is a problematic situation?
Yeah, I don't think he's good enough to overcome everything he has to overcome. And, you know, he's putting on the good face and went to rehab and did all that. You know, that looks good for the coaches and the ownership. That means they'll give you another try. But I don't think we're going to see some kind of, you know, superstar that we that people expected coming out of A&M. And the biggest factor in all of this, like, I don't want to take this to another discussion, but y'all, you know, you take this what you will from what I said. The NFL has regulated playing in the pocket to the point of where they're making pocket quarterbacks safe. They've done that for the last 10 years. If they didn't put all those regulations in, pocket quarterbacks would be getting hurt the same way running quarterbacks are. They won't put in specialties for the running quarterbacks because they want this to stay a pocket quarterback league because they want a certain kind of superstar. So y'all take that however you want to take it, but that's the reality. If they didn't stop the pass rushers from coming in full head of steam and put in all this targeting and all these other things, some of these pocket quarterbacks would not be able to play. There's a reason guys in the early 90s and 80s had so much trouble as quarterbacks as they got older. Mobile Steve Young had to get up out of there because they had to put those things in place to save people. But now it's kind of the opposite direction. They're making it to where if you're a running quarterback, they don't care. You're on your own. But if you're a pocket guy, they will protect the hell out of you. And that's what we have now.
And interesting enough why you say that, too. Do you know who was in the top three offensive line last year?
Top three offensive lines?
Yep.
Oh.
Cleveland Browns are one of the top three. Cleveland Browns had one of the top three offensive lines in the league last year.
Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense, though, because you got the big boy at tackle, and they got the center. Who's the back? Or is he out now?
Right. And he looked questionable last year, and they have him. And not like they had a lot of the pieces of that offensive line blocking at the portion of the time while he was in the game, but they have to have a system there that these guys have to abide by. And with third and fourth stringers, he should be able to do something. I don't know. Just like you said, I don't know if it's a situation where he'll progress into being, let's say, a fair targeted, but that's his style of play, like erratic back there trying to make something happen and, you know, try to be introvert on the field. But I just don't see it happening, especially with them trying to piece this team together, you know, draft by draft. And I really don't feel like they're there right now from what we've seen last night in a low-scoring effort, both sides of the ball. And McCown is questionable in itself. I mean, he had one half of a season with the Bears, and then once he was in Tampa Bay, he looked questionable. Now he's here in Cleveland, and I don't feel like it's a better of a situation. And if Chinese football can't put it together, I wonder what the management or front office was thinking by getting rid of Hoyer. Like, felt like that was the best move. Like, I actually don't think so.
I told you, Ty, that this is about money with the Cleveland Browns front office. I told you that a year and a half ago with Hoyer, that he was going to be gone. The owner drafted Johnny Manziel, not the GM and not the coach. The owner did. Jimmy Haslam was the reason Manziel got drafted. You got a general manager and a coach that don't want this quarterback on their team. They're not going to put in a system that could possibly benefit him. Johnny Manziel's never going to be a pocket passer, ever. So What should you do? You adapt your system to fit the quarterback. Mike Pettine's not willing to do that. That's why he wanted Josh McCown, which tells you about Mike Pettine as a coach, but that's a whole different conversation. But the coach doesn't want the quarterback on the team, man. And that's the problem with a lot of these spread system quarterbacks. They're being drafted by teams that the coach, the quarterback, that the owner or the GM does. Colin Kaepernick, had he gone anywhere else in his league, would not be the same guy. He was fortunate to get drafted by the Niners because he had a coach who was willing to adapt to his skill set. Russell Wilson would not be the same guy if he wasn't in Seattle. He's got a coach willing to adapt to his skill set. Look at these other spread option quarterbacks around the league. Look at the teams they're on. Look at the teams they're on, the coaches they have, and tell me how many of them truly you think will be successful. Not a lot, because most of these coaches, they want the 6'4" blonde guy with the cannon arm who can't move, standing in the pocket, throwing a ball down the field.
That's what they spent their whole lives preparing to coach, and that's the style they want to coach. And the flip side of that is, you look at a guy like Jameis Winston, he doesn't have the problems that some of these other people have because he went to all these quarterback camps as a kid. He went through passing trees and all this other stuff. Most of these other guys, you grow up JFL, you're running, you know, option stuff. And since you're the quick guy, that's all you ever do. And then you get to college, and hell, they're not going to sacrifice winning to develop you. So they got you out there on that read one half of the field. If it's not there, go. And because of that, they have a much higher degree of difficulty when they get to the NFL because they have to unlearn a lot of things, bad habits, and learn a whole lot of new stuff. Like, it's not a thing of intelligence, which is what the media likes to play it out as. It's how you've been playing your whole life. Like, if they were to get rid of all of these quarterback safety rules in the NFL, and now pocket passers had to learn to be able to evade the rush and actually make plays on the perimeter and move around, then they would be struggling. And I doubt people would say that they're not intelligent, but it would be the same type of thing. Excuse me.
Do you think Brady could survive in the early, I mean, in the 80s or the early 90s?
When he was young, yes. But at this age, no, I don't think he could have extended his career like he is now. But he, I mean, as a young man, hell, Tom Brady's an all-time great. He would have balled out. He has, you know, great footwork in the pocket. So he would have taken the hits like Marino did. But you remember old Marino?
Yeah, when he started breaking down, yeah.
Yeah, man. That was,
but plus Marino, like we advocate all the time in the kitchen, he didn't have a run game. At least the one thing that helped Brady with the Belichick system, they kept a running back that could move the pile and still could pick up 4 to 7 yards, regardless if it was Kevin Falk or Maroney. They could sit behind the line and just move the crowd. So that actually helped them, you know?
Definitely. And look, all of us are of a certain age. We remember just a simple play in the first quarter, second and 10, the quarterback throws the ball out of bounds because there's nothing there. And the linebacker comes in, bam, smashes him. There's no flag. Like, that was a normal play in there.
Right. Right.
Huge difference.
I think it's to keep the Brady clean rule. At least that's what I call it, you know, from that game they played with the Ravens. And then they started getting all types of flags because they was hitting Brady, you know, about a second after he got, you know, the ball released, so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, he gets Michael Jordan calls the same way any other superstar does. Peyton Manning, same thing. But, I mean, there's only so much they can do. Brady can still move. Peyton, I don't know, he's kind of stiff out there with all the surgeries and all of that. But I want to ask you guys, do you think Peyton could have played, you know, up until this age back in that day?
Throw it around the kitchen. Oh, Chandler said no. Okay, that already. Nacho, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm saying
that. Oh, sorry. You said Nacho or Nas?
I said Nacho.
All right. What was the exact question now, so I get it right?
We asked if we could think of. Well, I first asked him if Brady could play in the early 90s and in the 80s. And then he said, could Peyton do it? And your thoughts on that?
I think both of them, if they had, if they could take their offensive lines, yes. If they could take the offensive lines that they had in the prime of their best years from the Indianapolis, being Peyton in from, you know, the one good, or not the one, but the good offensive line that the Patriots had, I believe yes. But without those offensive lines, no. They get tore up and no, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just looking at this from an old age standpoint. Like the way that Brett Favre came back after sitting out for a while and coming back and being able to play in this league, I don't think that that existed in the 90s, where you could be that old, could move it and get out there and play and be not only effective but a Pro Bowler. So that's what I mean by this. Because all these guys are any era quarterbacks. They can play in any era. I'm just saying they couldn't play up until the 38-plus. Like, that's – like, this is amazing what we're seeing right now.
I don't know, because Vinny Testaverde played till he was 41. And Vinny was statue his entire career. Vinny was a statue his entire career.
Didn't work out here, though.
Well, I mean, when he had an offensive line that could keep him clean, Vinny could put the ball anywhere he wanted. I mean, if you look at his numbers, Vinny actually racked his – I think he's up in, like, top 15 all-time yardage, passing yards, things like that. He's actually up there high on a lot of lists where people wouldn't expect him to be. So, I mean, yeah, they probably could, again, if they had, like, the Dan Fouts type of offensive line or the Marino offensive lines. But, I don't know, it's tough, though, because there are some guys that if you give them the right offensive line, you could put them, you could put them back in the 20s, and they could probably score. You know, when guys could, you know, come on the field with a baseball bat, you know, when kneecap people and stuff. But, I just don't trust Peyton because, you know, he fails in the playoffs. You know, I got no faith in him. But I don't know. There's some guys that I think that just translate. But Favre is the guy I think would have gotten killed in the 80s. Personally, I think he'd have gotten killed.
Yeah. What about Warren Moon also played, too, deep into his career also.
You got to remember, he had to go to the CFL to play quarterback. So by the time he got back to the NFL, it was already late. He was already in his late 30s. You know, people forget that Warren spent a lot of years in the CFL because no NFL team would let him play quarterback.
Okay, he turned 30 in 86. He came back to the league in 84. He played his last game in 2000.
Right.
But
I'm just saying, remember when he got to Seattle and he couldn't move? Remember the hits he was taking? Like they retired him, basically. He couldn't move anymore.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is, by the time Warren got back to the league, he lost his prime years. His prime years were already gone in the CFL. You know, when you start 29, 30, you're at the end of your prime. Not in the middle of it. You're at the end of your prime as an NFL player, especially a quarterback with all the hits you're taking. By the time Warren got back to the NFL, his prime years were gone. So the fact that he put up the numbers he put up in the NFL speaks to just how good Warren Moon, had he been able to play quarterback in the NFL from day one, would probably be considered the greatest quarterback in NFL history.
Really?
Be up there, that's for sure. I mean, his numbers are slightly exaggerated because he played that run and shoot, but no matter what, he could sling that ball, man. It is what it is. Warren Moon was always putting that thing right on the numbers. And like you said, how many Grey Cups did he win in Canada before coming down here? Was it five or something crazy like that?
It was a big number. It was like four or five somewhere in that neighborhood, yeah.
And he played six seasons up there. And his last season there, he threw, and this is crazy, he threw for 5,600 yards, and everybody is still gawking at what Drew Brees did two seasons ago. Just imagine if he was able to do it on an NFL field.
You know what I'm saying? Warren Moon was the truth, man. People don't know. Warren Moon was the truth. He really was. If he had gotten to play in his prime in the NFL, it would have been really, really, really ugly.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now I know he didn't want to talk about the Panthers situation. Did we talk about the Panthers wide receiver dilemma? the basketball topic that I had with J.R. Smith trying to revert back to the Cavaliers after he was saying that he was opting out and didn't want a part of them. Do you guys have something that you guys would like to discuss? I could throw it around the kitchen. Nacho, is there a topic that you'd like to throw around the table?
No, I didn't have anything specific. There wasn't anything kind of jumped out at me today.
Okay, Taylor, any one of the two that I had, I know that you didn't want to hear anything about the Panthers. But J.R. Smith trying to get back to the Cavaliers, or do you have something that you'd like to touch on?
You know, I don't discuss Earl Smith. He's a moron. But I would love to talk about Tristan Thompson and the fact that people are saying that he's worth $90 million for scoring 8 points a game and getting 9 rebounds. I'd love to talk about that.
Okay. Now, granted, that's the number that he's aiming for. Do you think Cleveland brings him back at a lower number, or do you think they'll let him go fish?
I think Cleveland gives him the 90. I think they give him the max. And it'll be the dumbest move in the history of basketball, right up alongside Thaddeus Young, Brooke Lopez. You know all the names I've been throwing out all year, so don't get me started on these guys. Aaron Aflalo, all of them.
Okay, but they just threw Kevin Love 100-plus. LeBron is getting, 20-plus a year also, so they're going to comfortably pay Tristan as well?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they made the threat of we'll play out the season and go out on the open market, and I'm sure Cleveland was like, please do that. We really want you to do that. You can go out there, we can get a real number, and then we can actually re-sign you for a reasonable amount. There's nothing wrong with him going for the 90. Yeah, that's the agent's job. Go for that 90. But, you know, if they sign for that, if they take that, then that's nonsense. But, I mean, he's LeBron's homie, so I'm sure they'll work something out to where it's like, look, man, just go stay this year, play it out. And, you know, next year you'll come back at a real rate. But you can't pay a backup power forward that kind of money as if he has the potential to be an all-time great. Tristan Thompson is just a really nice rotational player. That's not $90 million, even if the salary cap goes up or not. Like, that's just something you don't do.
And by the way, they offered him $80 million. They were willing to give him $80 million. He ain't worth $80 million. He ain't worth $60 million. He ain't worth $50 million. He ain't worth $40 million. But they were willing to give him $80 million. Here's the problem with these contracts they're giving out, and these players get so blinded by the zeros. The CBA is getting ready to come due. The NBA is already talking about, oh, we have teams losing money. These are the same teams that are giving guys like Enes Kanter $75 million when he ain't done a damn thing in this league. These are the same teams that are giving guys like Thaddeus Young $50 million. Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, this is the problem, though. There's more money in the NBA. The money is there. These teams pour mouth and are lying. We know they're going to lie in negotiations. That's what they do. So you have to kind of take the contract. The problem is, like the gentleman just said, when they get to negotiations, they're going to use these contracts as leverage and say, we can't continue this. This spending is out of control. We need something in place to stop us from spending crazily. Like, that's the hustle that they play every year. But the NBA is more a global game now, man. The jerseys sold in China, the subscription-based television contracts over there, it's a global game now, and there's money pouring in from everywhere, and that's why the Clippers sold for that huge amount that they did. Like, all of this stuff is relative to the money that's in the league. But the only way that beat writers and people could kind of explain this better to fans to me is they should do salaries by cap percentage. They should say this player is getting 15% of the team's salary cap. Because when you put that 90 or that 80 out there, it sounds like so much that, you know, it kind of just, it messes up our whole perception. We're like, wait a minute, you gave him that? He's not that good. But if you do it by cap percentage, it gives us a better understanding of what we're dealing with. So I think that's a more honest way of looking at it. Because you're right, $80 million already looks crazy when you're talking about a rotation guy. Like, he's not starting. So, I mean, yeah, it's some heavy stuff, man. Oh, go ahead.
What it also does is it allows teams then to not have to try to win. Well, we had to give Tristan Thompson $80 million. we had to give this guy blah, blah, blah. But we can't afford to pay anybody. We can't afford to bring in that star who would help us win the championship. So you'll have to settle for us going to the playoffs and losing in the first round. Oh, by the way, we're raising ticket prices. The casual, the average fan is not paying attention. And we all get, this is a money grab. If they give Tristan Thompson this money in a year and a half, right, when they have to get rid of the team, they can blame LeBron. Well, LeBron made us pay Tristan Thompson $80 million. We don't have the money. We don't want to keep paying a luxury tax. That's why we have to keep raising the ticket prices. That's why it costs so much for you to go to the game. Who gets blamed? The players. Fans don't pay attention to the fact that it's the owners doing this. They keep blaming the players. It's not the players' fault.
Yeah, not at all. And I'm guessing, like, the only thing they're thinking is Tristan Thompson is young, and if they do sign into that deal, if they get, if the cap situation gets kind of awkward and hard to work with, they can still move Tristan Thompson as a piece. I think that's how they're looking at it. Don't let him walk for free. At least keep him on the books. Maybe we'll be able to trade him. I'll trade him. I'm in Atlanta. I never thought the Joe Johnson contract would ever be able to be traded, but it happened, so.
But isn't the cap rate being raised? It was raised this year. It's going to be raised next year. It'll probably be raised again the year after that. So all this cap hit that you're talking about may not even be a cap hit in 2 years when the cap's been raised a significant amount from now till then. I mean, isn't the big talk around the league on how much more money there will be to spend for each team because the cap is being greatly increased throughout the years, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's the biggest increase ever.
Yeah, you're right, right on that, but Cleveland's different because they spent so much, and I think that was part of LeBron coming back. Like, he probably told him, look, dude, you're going to pay this luxury tax. I need everything that I want on my team, no excuses. So Cleveland's a little different just because of how much they spent. Like, you got Kyrie, Kevin Love, and LeBron on, you know what I mean? Those are three max deals on there already before you even start getting to the role players.
And the other thing, Nacho, is, again, that's the hammer they can use in the negotiation. Yes, the contracts are going up, which means we have to pay the players more, which means the teams are losing money. Not one NBA team is losing money. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at just the team, every sports franchise, just the team itself, will always lose money because the team by itself is a losing proposition because you're paying the players more than the team itself is bringing in. The value of the organization, that's a whole different story because now you're taking a concession, tax breaks, parking, merchandising, TV contract, radio contract, internet contract, all of those things, right? So now if you call all of that the team, teams make money hand over fist. But what they do is they look at the team in a vacuum.
Right.
The team in a vacuum. Look at the contracts and then just say, how many people are coming in every night? Let's see, most NBA arenas handle 20,000 max, give or take, right? There's no way if you're paying everybody on the team, if you're paying three guys max contracts, right? Three guys max contracts, everybody else is really up there. There's no way just to paying tickets every night for 82 games, actually only 41 home dates, there's no way that will cover the cost of the player's salaries. That's just simple math. So technically, you're losing money. And the more you have to pay the players, the more money technically you're losing.
Yeah, and then the other part with them is the owners will never open their books. And if you know anything about data, statistics, and when you start getting those numbers guys in there, you can make a $10 million profit look like a $2 million loss. You know what I mean? If you're good with numbers. And that's the numbers they're going to come to the table with when they negotiate with the players. So, I mean, the new players president or the new head of the Players Association, she's talking a real good game. I hope she's actually effective and can really get something done for them. But, yeah, it's crazy when you start looking at all this stuff, man, because people got so much to hide. I think John Oliver probably did the best thing we've seen in years on these stadium deals, if any of y'all seen that. But
do you think they re-sign him? Do the Cavaliers hang on to him and get JR in the door also?
Well, JR already signed, JR re-signed already.
Okay, so now it's all about Tristan. And the thing that they have to look at in considering this, and I hate to do it, Kevin Love is injury prone. I hope they know that.
And here's the other part, Ty. Kevin Love's coming out in the fourth quarter. We all know that. He's coming out in the fourth quarter. No one trusts him on the floor in the fourth quarter. So not only is he injury prone, he's not going to be in the fourth quarter, but you gave him a max contract. This is like this age of the NBA. It bothers me on many levels because I grew up, you know, with Connie Hawkins and Jimmy Walkers and the Mark McGuire's and Adrian Dantley and, you know what I'm saying, and Daryl Griffiths and the Wes Unselds, Dave Cowens playing center at 6'6" and dominating. Dave Cowens played center at 6'6". He was like 6'5.5". He listed at 6'6". Okay, Wes Unseld was 6'4", playing center. These are ball players, okay? These are men who could ball in any era. And I look at the money they didn't get to make. I look at what they had to do, taking jobs in the offseason. And I want some bum like Tristan Thompson, Thaddeus Young, Aaron Aflalo, Reggie Jackson, Kyle Singler, Brooke Lopez, get paid ridiculous sums of money. And they couldn't carry their job. None of them.
But you know what? It's interesting you said that, though, because Kevin Love, the actual quick fix in all this is if Kevin Love was to get stronger in the offseason and be able to slide over to center, that would keep him on the floor. If he could learn to actually guard centers to the point where he could at least box them out and help on the pick and roll enough to where they didn't have to sit him down. And I kind of think he owes that to Cleveland, the fact that they maxed him out. Like, look, dude, you got to make sure you can play in the fourth quarter. If you're a max guy, you can't be sitting down because you can't, you know, guard your assignment. Like, it's not really acceptable. So I think you should put on a little weight, get a little stronger, and slide over to that five for a while, man. How many centers do they really have to worry about every night?
But he's not willing to put in the work to guard power forwards. You really think he's going to put in the work to guard a center?
I don't know if it's as much work as it is just he's not athletic, his arms aren't that long, and he's not good at moving. The other team knows that, so they try to get him out there in pick and roll situations, try to make a move, try to get him in space. And, you know, those are his weaknesses. So, I mean, I don't know, man. You can't put a new pair of feet on that boy. You know what I'm saying?
The interesting thing I feel about that is this. Kevin Love wants to play the perimeter. He's not one of those bigs that goes down there and bangs. So him sitting out on the perimeter, it leaves it all up to the center to basically get rebounds because he wants to shoot. And LeBron sitting around the perimeter, well, you don't know where LeBron is going to be. He'll play wherever. But it puts a lot of pressure on who's going to be down there trying to get, you know, offensive rebounds and second chance points. And that's big for Cleveland if they want to be successful. Otherwise, they're going to have four people around the perimeter. And Miles Goff by itself down there. Unless we look at Barajal and the way Barajal started the season out, he looked pretty good, but he is also injury prone. So these are things that they have to watch out for Cleveland, especially the way that they're spending right now. Tristan Thompson is a big value, but 90 mil, I question. 80 mil, I question also, but I wonder where he does land because there has been interesting names around the NBA that have seen money as of this point. I mean, granted, I like the fact that Chandler pointed his finger at Oklahoma City. I'm not even looking at Enes Kanter and him getting a four-year deal for $70 million because they matched what Portland did. I'm looking at Kyle Singler, who didn't do crap. He didn't do crap for him. He'd even deserve a 25. He got $25 million. Over the next 5 years, forget what Kanter got. Singler didn't bring anything to the table. Nothing. So if Tristan was that valuable in an NBA Finals, And Saber just got that, too. It's going to be interesting to see what number lands for a guy like Tristan Thompson.
And, Ty, here's the danger for Tristan Thompson.
Yeah. Wait, right. would you say, Nas? Say it again, and I'll let Chandler go. Say it again, Nas.
Yeah, my fault, Chandler. I'm trying not to keep cutting in, man. I got to get used to y'all rhythm, man. But Chris Middleton, I think, got 70 for Milwaukee. So the numbers are crazy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, a lot of players that haven't really even proven themselves got paid. And Tristan did, you know, work while they were under, man, they were without Barajal. They were without Kevin Love and putting an interesting run to an NBA final. And LeBron is bowing for him. So I wonder how many things LeBron is pulling to get to Gilbert or that management. Taylor, what were you going to say?
And I was going to say is that Tristan Thompson can overplay his hand if the Cavaliers decide to call his bluff. Tristan Thompson only has value to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the range of $60, $70, $80 million. That's the only team he'll have value to at that number. You know why? Because every team has a Tristan Thompson. Let's be honest. Every team's got one. The Knicks
Not the Phoenix Suns at this moment. The Suns are struggling right now.
This they do. His name is Morris, but he's being a little.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He doesn't want to play. He wants out of Phoenix. He wants out of Phoenix if they trade his brother.
You know what, man? Listen, stop whining about your brother, you little bee. Okay, man up, sack up, shut up. But anyway,
I know.
Get him out of here.
It ain't like we don't love our family, right? It ain't even like that. Listen, we both got a couple million in the bank. We still got to stay together? Listen, I'll see you in the offseason, dog.
The other brother on his own is a marginal NBA player, might not stick around. But if he's there to... because his brother, so-called, needs him and all that, he can get a couple extra checks to stay in the league for a while and be a 10-year vet type of guy. But his brother is nowhere near him.
Okay, so Taylor Griffin should have did the same thing. Do you know who Taylor Griffin is?
right.
Do you know who Taylor Griffin is?
Yeah, Blake's brother.
Okay, so Taylor Griffin should have left the Suns when they picked him up and went to L.A. and cried and pouted.
We a package deal.
right.
That's why you stay in the league, man. But, yeah, that was some sad stuff to hear, man, this dude crying about his brother not being on the team and now he want to be traded. And he's a pretty good up-and-coming player. Like, he's not good enough to make demands.
Right, and the crazy part is now if Morris leaves, they don't have a power. They don't really have power forwards down there if he ends up leaving.
Yeah.
But they got Tyson Chandler. They got Tyson Chandler for 50
Tyson's
million.
Tyson's going to play the five. Alex Lynn are the five.
They brought Tyson Chandler in for $50 million. That'll cover up everything.
It sure will. You know what? It will. It'll make everything hunky-dory out here.
I forgot you're a Suns fan. I forgot.
Get him out of here, though. Get the motors. Get them both out of here. I don't want none of their, you know. They're just ridiculous. Get them out of here. Well, we need to trade him and a guard for somebody good. I don't know who, but we need to get somebody. We need to get somebody in there that wants to play for us. I don't want no fun because his brother can't play with him.
Listen, get Tristan. Give him 90. Y'all good. That's a solid boy on the block. He's solid.
He could get 90 out.
But, Ty, what I was trying to say is before I got distracted with the Morrises, and I meant to talk about that a while ago. I'm glad you brought it up. But Tristan Thompson only has value to the Cavaliers. If he tries to overplay his hand, and they decide to call LeBron's bluff and say, you know what, we're not going to give Tristan the money. If you want to leave, go ahead and leave. After you wrote that whole letter in Sports Illustrated, and you want to leave again over Tristan Thompson, go ahead. Tristan Thompson will be lucky to get $10 million a year from any other NBA franchise. And we all know this. The only reason the numbers are at this level is because LeBron James is pushing him. You put Tristan Thompson on the Sacramento Kings, Denver Nuggets. Let me name another bad team. Philadelphia 76ers. You really think Tristan Thompson will be in the league 2 years from now?
Yeah, and he's a try-hard rebounding guy that has a limited skill set, can't shoot the ball outside the 10 feet. I mean, he can't stretch the floor for you. So, I mean, yeah, he's undersized as well. So some nights he's going to have a bad matchup. So, yeah, he's not a great NBA player by any means. And LeBron can't leave. Like, he set this narrative of going back home. There's no way he can leave. I'm sure they ironed out some type of deal between him and Gilbert for him to come back. So I'm sure LeBron has some kind of assurance of certain things that are going to happen in order for him to make the deal to come back. But, yeah, you're right. He can't leave at all. There's no way he could pull that off.
Okay, fair enough. We picking on the Cavs and the Suns. Who thought Phoenix would get some luck? Oh, Nacho, I'm sorry. We got Arizona in the building. We do this. And Nas, watch how you talk about Joe Johnson. I'm a Joe Johnson fan. I am. I'm not going to lie. No, sir, let me stop. But I am a Joe Johnson fan, though. But you can do what you got to do.
Of guys who disappear most of the season, show up every so often, and don't capitalize on their talent. I love guys like that.
I bet you he averaged 22 points this season for Brooklyn. Watch.
And I bet they go nowhere with his 22 points.
That's not my problem. D-Will did them dudes dirty, man. If you leave it to Darren Williams, he did them dirty. Now he went back home. That's a whole nother story.
Right. Man, dude, D-Will, tragic NBA story. But, yeah, my bad.
Oh, gosh. Don't even start. Like, and I actually, you guys, Chandler, I was one that was trying to give him, like, extra credit to be like, you know what, this would be the season for him to turn around. This would be the season for him. He is not. So now that he's back in Texas, if he can't do it in Texas, I think, you know, in a season or two, he puts that number up in the Raptors and waves goodbye to everybody because he already got Jerry Sloan kicked out of Utah. That's a whole nother situation in itself. So D-Will, this is his last hoorah down there in Dallas.
Yeah, that'll work well. You got Darren Williams who's washed. You got Dirk Nowitzki who's over. You got Rick Carlisle who can't get along with anybody. Oh, that's going to end. Oh, man, that's lovely. Rick, Mark Cuban, you deserve every bad thing that's going to happen to your team this season. You really, really do.
The smartest man in the world who thought he was going to outsmart everybody after they win the championship, instead of trying to defend it, he decides he's going to break up the team because
he's smart. Everything.
And look at him now. You trying to give DeAndre, you couldn't give away your money to DeAndre Jordan on a max deal that he's nowhere near good enough to get. And now look at you. You're right. And Dirk is giving away how much money back to Cuban in order to keep trying to build up his team? That's who he owes, Dirk.
Now watch the ending of Dirk's legacy, if you will. Well, Dirk still could give you 20 a night. He'll feel like he could put them points up, but it's not going to look good. I don't think they finished 500. Well, we'll see. Let me not start stapling, you know, records to these guys. Let me stop.
Dude, they're in the West, man. Come on, let's be realistic, man.
I'm trying to be nice. Okay, well, we are at the tail end of the show. I need plugs and closeouts from each of you. We went overtime. That's cool, though. It definitely is a good Friday. Hopefully everybody go out there and enjoy their weekend and come back to the kitchen tomorrow, Sunday. Nas, thank you for stopping by, giving us an ear and a mind as well here at the Roundtable. Give us something to plug or close out or shout out here at the Roundtable.
No, shout out to y'all for doing a good show and letting me on. And, hey, next time I'm on, I'm going to slow my roll, man. I know I was jumping in too much today. So I'm going to slow my roll.
We know you like to eat now. We already talk about you outside the kitchen. We know you like to eat. It's okay, though. It's all right. We're good with that. They call it Southern hospitality, so we treat you like the South in here. Don't worry. All right, Nacho, give me a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut down the kitchen.
At Nacho in the Box, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Great show. It's always a pleasure. Chandler, I tell you, every time, baseball, I'm getting into it more and more. 5-0, Arizona Diamondbacks over Cincinnati Reds in the bottom of the fourth. It's been a great game so far. I'm going to enjoy the rest of this game. And regardless of the outcome, it's been enjoyable watching my Diamondbacks play over these months, even though they're hovering around 500. I'm definitely excited to start getting back into baseball since I'm learning so much. And on that note, hashtag free boxing for all on September. I want to get the date correct because you're not going to want to miss this. Saturday, September 26, 2015, Deontay Wilder versus Du Hoppus. I don't even know how to say his last name, and I'm not going to attempt to try to say it again because I don't understand this fight. But when the food fight comes back in, we will definitely talk about it. And there are some definitely other fights, big, great fights on PBC coming up, especially next week with Abner Mares. Give me one second. With Mares and Santa Cruz. So we got some good fights to be talking about. We'll get the food fight coming back in as soon as possible. Ty and I got to get to the grinding and figure out when we can get that in. As soon as possible, we'll get that back and get to chatting because we got some big fights, some huge fights, championships, zeros on the line, things like that. And it's just going to be an exciting few months, like I said. So we'll get this going on as soon as possible. Again, thank you guys for letting me come on. Sports City, you know, one of the best ever. So thank you guys.
I know this. Santa Cruz is a monster. He wins this fight. He's a big-time name in boxing. Trust me. Trust me, that boy is a monster. And he's taking care of everybody he's fighting. That's for sure. Mr. Knight, yes, sir.
I tried to get it in before I stopped. I'm sorry. Miss Ronda Rousey has a fight January 2nd coming up. We'll get discussing that because not only is she fighting for the first time someone who's bigger than her, she's fighting a southpaw and a boxer at that. So this is definitely an interesting fight for her. And the disrespect, she's already calling her a chick and a girl. The disrespect of not even calling her a fighter is definitely one thing that Ronda Rousey is starting to stir up already. So sorry that I came in late on that, Ty. But yeah, one thing we'll have to talk about. I know we get boxing, but that definitely needs to be discussed.
Okay. Are you sure you're done eating? I don't want to take your plate away from you now. Are you sure?
One more thing. Back-to-back MVPs. I'm sorry. I almost forgot. Thanks, Ty, for letting me run that back in.
No problem. See, Beyonce got a song with Jay-Z. It's called Drunk in Love. And people are still drunk in love in Arizona. And in a part of the song, she said, he's been drinking. Okay, Taylor, I need a plug and close out as we shut down this round table. Have at it, brother.
I'm glad Nacho brought up the fights. Because Ronda Rousey, you know, because she's fighting a bigger girl, she's getting set up for Floyd Mayweather because we all know he's a girl. Yeah, Ty, I went there.
How dare you, sir?
With it.
When she can make $222 million in 36 minutes, holler at me. That's all that matters.
But anyway, I don't interrupt you when you're closing out. Deal with it. Breathe it in. Bask in it. My thugnificence. Nacho, Nas, thanks for coming. Nas, don't worry about how you jump in. We got to get Nacho on that train. Just jump in there, man. Just jump in there and eat. And I'm calling now. Tomorrow we talking boxing. Tomorrow, Saturday, we talking boxing tomorrow. Because, see, I'm saying what I'm saying to piss Ty off. He knows it. I'm already under his skin. He's going to act like I'm not. But during his closeout, he's going to say something real slick to try to get back at me. So wait for people. It'll be real close to the end when he gets into tell a friend. Oh, and by the way, for those of you on Twitter, doing your own little podcast, here's a thought. Be original. Stop stealing. Don't talk about you in the kitchen. Don't talk about tell a friend to tell a friend. Get your own shit. Stop biting.
Hey, Sports, I don't even know what to say right now because I was told not to cut in. I was told that I can't talk about the dude after he just told me to deal with it. Like, he tried to seal me off, and I'm up here cooking, man. You know, you stop a chef from cooking. Like you can't do that. Like, that's messing up the food. I got food for thought for these people. And let me just tell you this, Chandler Knight. Let me just tell you this. You said you want to get Nacho on that plane and just cut in. Let me say something about the Packers. I bet you Nacho cut me off. I bet you do it. I don't know how many times I've sat in the kitchen and have it. Let him cut me off. Let him cool off. Put up a message like, Ty, you know what? Aaron Rodgers still the dude. Like, listen, I've dealt with it all, buddy. Just let me tell you that. And the fact of the matter is, since you didn't want to be cut off, $220 million for her first $5 million. Count that. Look. If you ever seen the movie Belly, where DMX said, count the money. Count the money. You feel me? Look. I don't know. I might be telling my age. People might not have seen that. That was a hood classic. Belly, if you didn't watch it, go watch it. Just don't get caught up in the scene because some crazy stuff happened in that scene. This one, X told him to count the money, which is crazy in itself. But 220 to her first five, and I don't know if she'll see another day like that. We'll see. But Ronda Rousey, do your thing. Florida be doing this thing again. Probably was an epic number again. Even though it is Andre Berto, he still wants to see some dollars. He got a deal with CBS and Showtime and all them. I just don't understand why people try to classify these two together. They're in a whole different sport. MMA and boxing are two different styles of fighting. Like, stop. You can't. You got a girl really calling out Florida, really, to build up hype. Stop it right now. Shame on you. If you keep on saying Ronda and Floyd, there's something wrong with you. Something wrong with you. SportsCityChef.com. Check out the website, interview, the blog, the chef. He said I was going to say it at the end of the show. I'm saying it all around my clothes out. That's how I do. That's how I get down. They know what I do in this kitchen. I don't play around. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if y'all out there biting, if you don't know, now you know.
I'm ready.
It's a dangerous love affair. Can't be scared when it goes down. Got a problem, tell me now. Only thing that's on my mind is who's gonna run this town tonight. Who's gonna run this town tonight? We gonna run this town.
We are, yeah, I said it, we are. This is Rock Nation. Pledge your allegiance, it's your baptism. All black, everything. Black cars, all black, everything. And our girls are black birds, riding with their cylinders. I get more in depth if you boys really real enough. This is La Familia, I'll explain later. But for now, let me get back to this paper. I'm a couple bands down and I'm trying to get back. I gave Doug a grip, I lost a flip for 5 stacks. Yeah, I'm talking 5,60, got 0, hit up. Back to running circles round, niggas. Now we quit up, hold up.
Life's a game, but it's not fair. I break the rules, so I don't care.
Uh-huh.
I keep doing my own thing. Walking tall against the rain. Victory's within the mile. Almost there, don't give up now. Only thing that's on my mind is who's gonna run this town tonight.
In a dark season, we follow the leader. So Eric B, we are microphone fiend. It's the return of the God, peace God. Ain't nobody fresher. I'm in Mason, Martin, Martella on the table screaming. Fuck the other side, they jealous. We got a banquet full of bras, they got a table full of fellas.
Yeah.
And they ain't spending no cake. They should throw their hand in, cause they ain't got no space. My whole team got dough, so my bank account is looking like millionaires, bro.
Life's a game, but it's not fair. I break the rules, so I don't care. I keep doing my own thing. Walking tall against the rain. Victory's within the mile. Almost there, don't give a
Now you could go from being Joe Blow to everybody on your dick, no homo. I bought my whole family whips, no Volvos. Next time I'm in church, please, no photos. Police escorts, everybody passports. This the life that everybody asks for. This a fast life, we are on a crash course. What you think I rap for, to push the fucking rap for? But I know that if I